Brent Q here on a Tag Team Thursday. And Jameson Hensley is with us here in studio. And JMO, the book is called Flying High, Stories of the Baltimore Ravens. We've talked about it a little bit. And I know you've gotten into it with Keith on the Ravens Saturday Huddle. But this is, as Q knows and as you know, one, some of my all-time favorite topics, talking about the history of the Baltimore Ravens, especially when you go back to when the team arrived through that first Super Bowl run, my prime, if you will, of being a fan. Let's start with some of the cool stories from that 96-97 team. When the team gets here, they hire Ted Marchibroda. They do come from Cleveland. There's some interesting characters on those teams.
Oh, definitely. And, I mean, I think even the start of the team is kind of, even before they played their first game, is kind of interesting because there were different theories on what to name the team.
Mm-hmm.
Art Modell wanted to name them the Bulldogs because the Canton Bulldogs were the first NFL team. He thought it would be good to kind of tie in still his Ohio roots to
really, you
know, yes,
that would have been ugly.
Yeah, and
that would have been
David Modell wanted to call them the Americans.
Oh, I remember that,
because of the train. There was a locomotive called the American, and he thought, well, you know, they're always trying to think of when you have a new franchise, how can you kind of get exposure? And he thought he could do, hey, who's America's team now, and have this little thing with Jerry Jones. And that of course,
didn't remember the third name, the Marauders, right?
Marauders, and, well, Johnny Unitas wanted Mustangs. He was kind of lobbying for Mustangs because of the horse.
Right.
He thought with Colts and
that
Mustangs.
Makes sense.
So, you know, everybody had their what they wanted, and then they had it to a Baltimore Sun poll, and Ravens was just overwhelming.
A true democratic way. They voted on it, and Ravens come up. It's great because it ties in with the bird theme in this town, and also it connects us to our history and our most famous poet, probably, I would
Absolutely.
Say.
Yeah, and then, you know, they had to make the decision. They kind of knew when they came into town they needed a coach who was very fan-friendly, could get attention and drum up interest into the team. From a public relations standpoint, and with the team moving with Bill Belichick, probably the exact opposite of what they needed for a first coach. So that was the decision to let Bill Belichick go and hire Ted Marchibroda. And you know, with Ted, you know, a lot of people remember the losses and kind of the struggles. But when you talk to the people that were around the team with Ted, he kind of came up with what everyone says now is play like a Raven. Ted was the guy that looked and kind of had the attributes of what to look for in a Raven player. He had a great eye for talent. And yes, Ozzie Newsome, he learned a lot in evaluating players from Ted Marchibroda. So even though they didn't really say play like a Raven back then, when you're looking at players that are passionate about the game, that are always running to the ball, especially defensively, that goes back to Ted Marchibroda.
I think Baltimore sports, you know, has had its real strong share of successes. What made this team such a, I don't know, like a beloved team when you have such a deep-rooted history with the Baltimore Colts?
Well, I think back in 2000, not only, I mean, winning a Super Bowl helps, obviously, but I think the team that you were a part of was really for a blue-collar town, very easy to get attached to. Not only did you have a kind of roll-up-the-sleeves type of a defense, that, you know, the old-school defense, but the quarterback was Trent Dilfer, a guy that for a city like Baltimore that felt like they got kicked to the curb by the NFL time and time again, as far as expansions and teams not coming here, the guy that they could really attach themselves to is a Trent Dilfer, who really got kicked to the NFL curb. Everyone said that he couldn't play, he couldn't be a starter in this league. And I think that's, you know, adding those two elements, I think the city really did rally around them. And even now, when you look at the second Super Bowl title, when you have kind of that average Joe quarterback as well, I think people kind of, you know, they could really relate to those players and those teams. And, you know, even my book, it kind of starts with owner Steve Bisciotti addressing the mass crowd at the stadium saying, you know what, I hope you never lose that chip on your shoulder, because he kind of likes that about this town.
Brian Billick, I believe he belongs in the Ravens Ring of Honor. Tell me the impact he has on the franchise, essentially the moment of his arrival. They jump from a, what, six-win team to an eight-win team, Super Bowl year the next year. And Brian's arrival does coincide with another big decision in team history, and that's bringing Qadri Ismail
on board.
Hey, I come.
So you can kind of ride that together. Hand-in-hand.
Right. And, I mean, Brian for the, you know, and he really kind of, you know, even when you talk to him, and I talked to him about the book as well, he gave me a lot of great insights on the players and a lot of great stories. But he kind of even trumped up the whole egocentric thing about himself. But to even to that point, one of the first meetings he had, he talked to the players where, because you remember, the Ravens back in 99, they had a lot of Pro Bowl players. They just didn't have a lot of wins.
And that was a good defense back in 99.
Exactly. And he challenged the players, do you want to go to Pro Bowls or do you want to go to a Super Bowl? And I think they kind of needed, that team kind of needed, especially the players that have been with the Ravens in 97, 98, 99, and didn't understand about winning and things like that, to have kind of a coach to come in there saying, hey, I'm going to save your body. I know how to practice. I'm going to save your body, and we're going to go out there and turn this around. And he had a cockiness about him that I think really did rub off on a lot of the players. And for a franchise that had never won, never experienced the playoffs, they needed that kind of a character as a coach.
Here's a crazy thing about it. He was a tight ends coach for the Minnesota Vikings, and Brian was still is, just a great guy. He would, you know, kind of walk around the hall, and we talk, whatever. When he became the coordinator for the Vikings, and, you know, we started having some successes and stuff, and you know, Brian, you know, had that, yo, we got this mentality. But he always had that gadget way of doing things. You talk about the whole play like a Raven. Well, I think the league, in the way from an iPad standpoint and all that, and the way you watch, we call it film, but technically the way you watch digital. Somebody's going to say, hey, let's watch some digital.
Big day in the digital room.
Right. You know, I'm telling you, he was the one who put playbooks on computers. And we would actually have him do like a – his chalk talk on the computer, and we would laugh at it, but technically it was a hell of a lot better than when we had to sit there and do it on the doggone overhead projector and, you know, smudge up all the doggone, you're trying to erase a circle and make it an X and all that. So he had a lot of innovation to his game that I think, you know, guys appreciated. And the fact that, you know, he felt him, Tony Dungy, and Denny Green all learned from Bill Walsh. So their system of doing things practice wise, it made perfect sense for a veteran player.
Yeah, and one of my favorite stories about Brian, because he does have the kind of the perception of that he's arrogant and egocentric, and he gave me a really good story about how after after the night in Tampa winning the Super Bowl, they had the after party. I don't know if, how much you remember about that, Hugh.
Oh, I remember.
But Brian then has to go for that 7 o'clock, 7:30. He has to go in and address the media the next day. So he goes and takes a quick shower. And in the shower, he kind of describes what seems like is a panic attack. And for a guy that seems so confident, he said it really got to him because he started thinking, where do you, it's the second year as an NFL head coach. Where do you go from here? And it sort of kind of got to him. And he really did. He felt like he had a panic attack in the shower before going to address the media.
Brian actually had a couple things. And if you watch the Ravens 2000 Super Bowl video, but he had a lot of lessons, I think, that actually, I'm not one to hype up too many coach speak stuff too much, but he had a couple of things in there. Right after he won the Lombardi Trophy, I think Ozzie came up to him and said, you could have done this last year. And he says, that's just one more year, they'd run me out of town sooner, which is how it works, which is exactly how it worked for Brian Billick in his career in Baltimore and almost his entire career as an NFL coach, which seems like it's over. It's exactly what happened, how the way of the world works. The quicker you win, that's just one more year to your final exit. So,
yeah.
Interesting stuff. Jameson, it's an amazing work by you. These stories that we could go all night with, and hopefully we will have a chance to do that one day. It's called Fly High, Stories of the Baltimore Ravens. And tomorrow, 4:30 to 7 o'clock, a Q&A at the Sports Legends Museum downtown, plus a book signing, 4:30 p.m. tomorrow. Great day for that. Hey, on your way to the beach, leaving downtown from work, whatever, come see Jameson, grab a book, do some Ravens Q&A with him, 4:30 tomorrow.
Q is in the book, too.
Q is in the book. Q's featured.
There is a whole section on Kadre Ishbia.
Here's the reality. There aren't too many Ravens receivers who have had over 1,000 yards in a single season, and Q did it twice.
Yeah. I'll tease my little thing on Q's chapter is that for when they started to get hot and they had to do a quarterback change and go to Trent Dilfer, Q's role changed, and he really did have to as far as the ego, he had to put it in the back pocket for the Ravens to continue to win. So that's a little bit of part of the chapter on Q.
Amazing stuff. Well, Jameson, thank you so much again. The book is called Flying High, Stories of the Baltimore Ravens, tomorrow, 4:30 to 7 o'clock at the Sports Legends Museum downtown, right next to Camden Yards. A Q&A plus a book signing. Great stuff there. Jameson, thanks again.
Thank you so much.
When we come back, Shonda Bergantz will join us. And they have a big event coming up in September, Q.
Yes.
And for OJ, I also want to ask her about the Ice Bucket Challenge and what that has done for their foundation for awareness of ALS and to a future cure, hopefully, of ALS. That's coming up. Also, we'll do a special edition of Headlines tonight.
Headlines.
We'll play What Conference Are They In Now, talking about D1 teams bouncing around to different conferences. My conversation with Orioles prospect Chance Cisco. We'll talk to Moe's and Ravens still coming up as well as we continue here on a tag team.